Hello, my friends. This is Sarah from Weird Horizon, where we explore topics on the spooky, the esoteric, the countercultural, and the just plain weird. And I have returned from the dead. Today, we're going to be beginning a series on the history of the vampire and its long lineage as a mutable, adaptive symbol against which we can define our own humanness. It is a figure which really needs no introduction, so I'm not going to waste time on one here. Just know that I expect this to be a fairly long series that will dive into the history of the word vampire, its folkloric roots, famous so-called real-life vampire cases and panics, spanning from the 16th to the 19th century approximately, as well as the vampire in literature, film, and metaphor. So if that sounds good to you, all you need to do is stick around. I will very briefly here outline some of the sources I found particularly useful, but this list is not exhaustive, and I am very thankful and honestly overwhelmed by the sheer volume of excellent research there is out there on this icon of humanity, the vampire. So thanks to the Histocrat video on Vampires Before Dracula, the French Whisperer's History of Vampires, The History of Vampire Hunting by Kaz Rowe, The Vampire: A New History by Nick Groom, Realm of the Vampire: History and the Undead by Daniel J. Wood, The Magia Posthuma blog by Niels K. Peterson, The History of the Word Vampire by Katarina M. Wilson, A Century of Draculas by James Craig Holt, Vampires and Death in New England, 1784 to 1892 by Michael E. Bell, English Translations of Lenore by Walter Wilson Gregg, The Blood is the Life, Bram Stoker's Infected Capital by Richard J. Walker, Vampires as Creatures of the Imagination, Theories of Body, Soul, and Imagination in Early Modern Vampire Tracts by Cohen Vermeer, and the excellent blog Lamas Dvorsky on Slavic Mythology. Again, it goes without saying, I may butcher some pronunciations in this, but I'm going to try my best to get to grips with these words without putting my horrendous British spin on it. But for now, let's get on with it. So if we are to talk about the figure of the vampire through the ages, we need to come to some definition of what exactly defines a vampire. Very broadly, we can describe them as feeding on the life force of a living creature, often more specifically their blood, being themselves undead or inhuman in some way. Their unnatural feeding underscoring this. I put heavy air quotes around these words, as practically every word within this very bold definition is shifting and mutable in meaning over the period we'll be talking about. What is undead and inhuman adjusts in definition, as do the exact meanings of dead and human, which is half of what makes researching and learning about vampires so interesting. We can, however, add more detail pertaining to the marks of vampirism, drawing from folklore, vampire panics, and their literary treatment. When digging up the corpse of one suspected of vampirism, of climbing from their grave to attack their close family and wider community, in finding a vampire, we would find a corpse resisting decay, or appearing unnaturally renewed in death. Liquid blood would be found on or in the corpse, particularly around the mouth. They would, in short, be not quite dead, but not quite living. How a vampire comes to be this way is much harder to neatly pin down, as is the mind of the vampire and their nature. The refined literary vampire, the one that springs most readily to mind at the word, is undead, yes, but also often charming, clever, beautiful, seductive. They kill for pleasure and to spread vampirism, sucking blood in an intimate, often wanted exchange of power and vulnerability. They are described with human-like impulses and often weaknesses, coming with it guilts, thoughts of damnation, regret at the loss of their humanity. They share very little in common with the folkloric beast vampire, an instinct-driven predator, killing for food and a plague upon its family. Both fit within our bare bones description. Both have been called by others vampires. So how did we get from one to the other? What is the original vampire from which all others are born. As Katerina Wilson states in The History of the Word Vampire, without whose work I couldn't have even begun to write this section, to quote, "There are four clearly discernible schools of thought on the etymology of vampire, advocating respectively Turkish, Greek, Hebrew, and Hungarian roots for the term. But an exact origin, as may be implied by this, is incredibly hard to pin down when we're talking about the word vampire, as where the term is used in English, French, and Latin writing, it is often to describe superstitions or cases in places like Russia, Poland, and Eastern and Central Europe. And it is partly for this reason that one cannot talk about the folkloric vampire without talking about its intertwined history as a narrativized and often politically or culturally charged term." So influential Austrian linguists suggest that vampire and its Slavic synonyms upior, upir, and upir are all derivatives of the Turkish uber, or witch. Some theorize an origin in the Greek word for to drink. One of the closest antonyms we have for our Western vampire is rikolakas. However, this most likely postdates the popularization of the word in Western writing, being the Greek word for Eastern European vampires as written about in English and French texts. It's already very complicated. But a Slavic origin is the most widely accepted theory for the word's origin, specifically Serbian origin from vamti or vamti, being no doubt very close in sound to the Anglophone ear to vampire. However, Polish, Lithuanian, Bulgarian, Hungarian, and Croatian suggestions also exist, and Serbia being the home of one of the most famous anecdotal vampire cases, the Arnold Paul case. Now, Russian folklorist Alexander Afanasyev speculated vampire as derived from the Lithuanian vimti or vamti, to drink, or vampiti, barking or yammering. Whereas Jan-Louis Berkowski, Slavonic vampirologist, argues in The Darkling, the Serbo-Croatian vampire and Old Russian upir as origins for the modern vampire. Now, the Hungarian word vampire is as similar sounding and looking as we're going to get to vampire, but has evidence of being introduced back into Hungary and Transylvania by the German press writing on the vampire panics. Add on to the fact that many of the publicised vampire cases spring from marginalised and often colonised border states of the Russian Empire, terms being circulated back and forth in folklore and popular accounts are a given. Furthermore, the fact is that many of these terms sound similar but have meanings only vaguely related to vampirism, or at least as we think of it today. So many relate to drinking or sucking, but also the unnatural flight abilities ascribed to folkloric vampires, relating them to birds, witches, bats, and even werewolves. In terms of when the term came into popular use as we know it as today, there are also differing stories here, but most relating back to the reporting of a vampire case, hinting that the term came from the witnesses themselves or is a westernization of a term already existing. For instance, quoting Wilson again, "In France, according to most dictionaries, the word vampire was introduced in 1737 through the Lettre Juive, the ninth chapter of which recounts two instances of vampirism in the village of Kisilova near Gradisk. However, it only seemingly became a household term in France after Calmet's work, translated into English as The Treatise on the Apparitions of Spirits and on Vampires or Revenants of Hungary, Moravia, et al., was published in 1746. A German cognate similarly entered the language through accounts of Polish, Russian, and Lithuanian vampires called by the Polish name upior. In English, though, its use seems to date back at least to the 17th century, but then was often used as a metaphor, pointing to the fact that the term must have already been fairly well known, if not often used in literary circles or in the kind of elevated academic writing that tends to survive. So the 1734 anonymously titled Travels of Three English Gentlemen from Venice to Hamburg, being the grand tour of Germany in the year 1734, which is just snappy title, has this to say on vampires as paranormal creatures. These vampires are supposed to be the bodies of deceased persons, animated by evil spirits which come out of the graves in the nighttime, suck the blood of many of the living, and thereby destroy them. They say they suffer in the manner just related from people lately dead, or rather the spectres of those people, upon which their bodies, from the description given of them by the sick person, being dug out of the graves, appear in all parts, as the nostrils, cheeks, breast, mouth, etc., turgid and full of blood. However, it is where the vampire and other legends overlap that hints at two broad kinds of folklore coming together to form the modern vampire. So Serbian vampires and werewolves are often called by the same term, as are they in Bulgarian, and are Greek vampires and werewolves both termed vrikolakas. However, in English, the idea of the werewolf was established in medieval times as a human shape-changer with Anglo-Saxon and potentially Old Norse origins, whereas vampire only came into common parlance in the 1700s. We can even say that the medieval witch has a fair overlap with the folkloric vampire, with both having the supposed power to bring on drought, send down storms, crop failures, livestock plagues, and various diseases. So let's have a look now at a few examples of folkloric vampires, the kinds of creatures whose legends blended to form the modern vampire. This list is far from exhaustive, but just serves to illustrate both the overlap in terms between various paranormal beings and the cross-pollination of similar terms and stories, and the sheer breadth of qualities attributed to what we would now class as vampires. So Lilith of Mesopotamian and Jewish folklore was said to be the first wife of Adam. Of particular danger to women and babies, with a taste for human blood, Lilith exiled herself from the Garden of Eden and sired demon offspring. A figure of uncontrolled sexuality, or depending on your viewpoint today, early feminist icon, it was said that a man sleeping alone might be visited at night by Lilith. Similarly, Lamia of ancient Greek mythology was a night spirit and child-eating monster. After having an affair with Zeus, Zeus's wife Hera killed Lamia's children, and so she snatches and eats any unguarded children. Now, Polish Zmory or Zmora are also said to feed off the living at night, humans and animals in this case, but are not able to kill them directly, only weaken them. Many describe them as the wandering souls of the sleeping or dying, or those who died without receiving the holy sacraments, their souls thus trapped between the worlds of the living and the dead. Often able to traverse even the smallest gap, such as a keyhole, these commonly invisible beings can take the form of a human, often stereotypically witch-like in appearance. Similarly, Bieda is a Polish primeval demon and shapeshifter said to bring misfortune and misery, her name deriving from the word poverty. She nourishes herself on happiness and draws it from victims along with their vitality. She can turn herself into any kind of household object, and thus torments a chosen family, feeding upon them until she causes their premature death. One may potentially be free of her by tricking her into possessing a beautiful object and passing this object on as a gift to one's enemies. Similarly, the Polish Striga and Romanian Strigoi are creatures feeding on human blood. Often linked to being born with two souls, Striga were also born with two sets of teeth, or two hearts, or similar. The second soul is left trapped in the body at death, but loses any links to its prior humanity. Thus they sleep in their graves and leave at night to feed on blood and organs, often enacting on their community revenge against past wrongs. Destruction of the corpse would put an end to their visitations. Now, Romanian strigoi are thought to be related to the root term strix or striga with a feminine suffix, but this origin is also under contention. In French, strig means a bird woman who sucks the blood of children. Strix and striga, or striges, of Greek and Latin myth are owl-like ill omens. Again, said to prey on children, it is thought that you could protect the child with an amulet of garlic. In the medieval times, their legend evolved to the point it was said that they may wear clothing and appear human before being conflated with strega, the Italian term for witch. Now, witches at the time were again given all kinds of magical abilities, as harbingers of death, disease, and war, to draining the life from children and babies for their own means. Now, it is said that Serbian vampires or vampires will rise from their grave 40 days after their death, possessed by a demon, ruddy and full of blood. Hence, those who overindulge, particularly in drink, are described as red as a vampire. This theme of excess is also extended to Slavonic Roma belief in vampiric agricultural goods, such as, to quote, a pumpkin kept after Christmas will also become a vampire. And this idea that things being kept beyond their natural lifespan may become vampiric in nature is something that we see picked up much later in the literary vampire. In Macedonian folklore, the Vrikolakas is described like a bull skin full of blood, with a pair of eyes on one side, gleaming like live coals in the dark. And the Greek Vrikolakas is more likely to feed on the organs rather than the blood, and is derived from the Bulgarian word varkolak. It was believed one could become vampire-like after death if one lived a sacrilegious life, were buried in unconsecrated ground, or, interestingly, ate the meat of an animal killed by a werewolf. In this way, it was an affliction one could catch. Now, they do not decay, but appear gorged with blood, crushing the life out of their sleeping victims. Again, destruction of their body in their grave was a way to end the curse. Outside of Europe, the Jiangshi, or Chinese hopping vampire, absorbs its victim's qi, or life force, instead of blood. A reanimated corpse, by day it rests in its grave, by night it jumps at its victims. They are either those of improper burial, a spirit possession of the body, or those injured by another, Jiangshi, slowly turning into one themselves. Ranging in appearance from almost human to hugely decayed, the Jiangshi is often afraid of its own reflection in the mirror. The folklore is thought to be related to the practice of walking the dead back to their hometown after death so they may be with their families, and the superstition that those involved might induce the corpses to walk on their own zombie-like. It was also considered bad luck to see a corpse being transported, so it was often walked at night. The Tai Kresu is a nocturnal creature, often a woman cursed for performing dark magic. Appearing as a floating head and organs, by night it detaches from its body, seeking blood and flesh to consume. Now, colonialism meant many existing folklore were renamed vampire, which shared similarity with what would become the westernized vampire. For instance, the Obaifo of Western Africa from the folklore of the Ashanti. Inhabiting the bodies of men and women, they were evil spirits thought to travel at night in search of food, often targeting children and crops. Also variously described as witch-like, one was thought to be born Abaifo and are also able to change form in order to carry out their attacks. Similarly, the Asanbosam, or Sasanbosam, is a vampire-like being of southern Ghana, Togo, and the Ivory Coast. With iron teeth and bat-like wings and attacking those from above, its European interpretation is as a blood-drinking predator, but in origin, it is a guardian of the land, a divine protector, only hunting those who break custom. It is clear from this that demonic blood drinkers have existed in folklore for millennia, but this recent version, around the time of vampire cases, is tied up with moral and religious ideas around excess, an unnaturally extended life with its lack of decay. Many centre around an unnatural threshold between life and death, and they also include a supernatural explanation for crop failures, death, disease, especially those diseases striking down members of the same family and young children, or more broadly, a kind of explanation for the bad luck that befalls particularly the poor. It is this kind of vampire that we will take with us to explore some famous vampire cases and publications which fed into their sudden fame. And as Voltaire so nicely put it in his Philosophical Dictionary of 1764, nothing was spoken of but vampires from 1730 to 1735. They were laid in wait for, their hearts torn out and burnt. They resembled the ancient martyrs. The more they were burned, the more they abounded. But with that, we are going to leave it here for today on the history of the vampire. In the meantime, you can find me wherever you consume your podcasts, and you can chat with me on Twitter as Weird Horizon and on Instagram as Weird Horizon Podcast. Happy to be back for the new year and with some cool plans for what's coming up. Much love as always, but for now, bye.